This is Solve It for Kids.
Hello, my amazing and curious friends. My name is Jennifer, and this is Solve It for Kids, the podcast that gives kids and families a peek inside the real world of scientists, engineers, and experts as they solve problems in their jobs using creativity, cooperation, and critical thinking. And now please welcome to the show my podcast partner, Galactic Space Geek, Jeff Gagne.
Hello, Jennifer. I feel like I've said this more than once, but as much as I love space, I really love when we have guests that take us the complete opposite direction, and we talk tiny.
Ooh, tiny. So what problem are we solving today?
What is living in your dirt?
What is living in your dirt? Oh, this is going to be tons of fun. Who is our guest today, Jeff?
That's what I was talking about with Talking Tiny. Today, we have Kelly Bull, who is a professional horticulturist and certified permaculturist, who's going to talk to us about what's living in our dirt.
That's awesome. Welcome to the show, Kelly.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
So I'm just going to go and ask the very first question. What is a horticulturist?
So a horticulturist is somebody who specializes in growing plants.
Okay. I think that's one of those words that a lot of us have heard. Right. But I don't know if we've actually said, hey, Google, what's the definition of that? Does it have to be a certain kind of plant to be a horticulturist? Or is it just anything growing out of the dirt?
It can be anything grown out of the dirt, any plant you want.
Even weeds, right?
Yep, even weeds. There are horticulturists that specialize in all sorts of plants.
Okay. You are a professional horticulturist. Does that mean that you have been playing in the dirt since you were a kid? Always know that you just love plants and dirt?
I have. Ever since I was a kid, I really loved plants. I just loved trying to grow them. I loved going to the nursery with my mom. I loved being in gardens and climbing trees. So I've just always really loved plants.
So I assume you have a very green thumb. Can you even think of how many different kinds of plants you've grown, or maybe ones that maybe didn't grow well?
Well, contrary to popular belief, a green thumb is not genetic. So you do not have to be born with a green thumb and you can learn it. And so I don't know a single person who hasn't killed a plant before.
So oh, that's me.
If you have killed a plant, there is hope for you yet. You earn your green thumb by continuing to try and to practice and to learn. So everyone can grow plants.
Okay, well, listeners, did you hear that? Rewind 2 minutes and listen to that again. Everybody can learn to grow plants. Before we jump further into what you do, do you have one little tip for those of us that kill a whole lot of them?
I would like
to grow them better, but I'm not awesome at it.
I'm with you on that.
I'd say a sneak peek into what we're about to talk about. It's soil. Soil is everything. Ooh. So when you take care of your soil, you take care of your plants.
That was a great segue. So if soil is so important, why is it so important for the plants?
So you want to grow the happiest and the healthiest plants that you can, and they're getting their nutrients from the soil. They're plants, so they're able to do photosynthesis and create a lot of their own energy, but the nutrients come from the soil. And so it's kind of like if you're an Olympic athlete and you want to be the highest jumper or run the fastest or throw the farthest, you need to have good technique, but you also need to look at where your energy is coming from and the nutrients that you consume.
Sure.
If you're an Olympic athlete, you're not eating junk food in order to perform your best and be your healthiest. And same thing goes with plants. They want to eat the healthiest food that they can have. And so a lot of times what we end up doing is we end up buying fertilizer from the store in chemical and giving them to our plants. And so that's great because it's nutrients, but that is like feeding our plants junk food.
Really?
I have never thought of it that way. And honestly, right now, My 10-year-old is growing a tomato plant in a jar on our kitchen windowsill, and I am officially going to be thinking of it as Usain Bolt from now on.
Yeah, so we're wasting our money on feeding our plants junk food when we could be feeding them really nutritious nutrients. And what's even crazier is that we have all of these living organisms in the soil that want to feed our plants healthy, great nutrients for free.
Wow.
We sometimes are treating our soil really poorly and making it so that these organisms can't do their job to feed our plants healthy nutrients. Wow. And so our job needs to be to let them do their job so that our plants can be fed great nutrients and be as happy and healthy as they possibly can be.
Okay. So that was like happiness followed by, oh no, sad human story. You're doing bad things. So I want to go back to the happy side. What can we do to help this process along?
So I think the first thing is learning what is in our soil and learning about the microorganisms so that we can learn how to protect them and how to nurture them. Yeah. And so the living organisms that are in our soil are doing these incredible functions. The major organisms, we have bacteria, we have fungus, protozoa, and nematodes. So most people have heard of bacteria and fungus before, but generally, what's kind of your feeling when you hear about bacteria and fungus?
Ew.
Ew. Right? Like it kind of scrunches up.
Ew.
Yeah, ew. But only 1% of the soil microorganisms are actually ew guys or the bad guys that cause diseases to plants. 1%.
One.
So that means 99% of the soil microorganisms are good guys that we're trying to foster and we want them to grow and do their important functions. So two of the most important activities that microorganisms are doing, are number one, eating, and number two, pooping.
Ah! Well, there you go.
Okay.
Yeah, it's simple. That's all they need to do is eat and poop. So
and
what
that's their job. That's helping.
On the microscopic level is what you're talking about, right?
On a microscopic level. So these microorganisms are so small that you can't see them unless you use a microscope. But through a microscope, you can actually see what they're doing. And so when they're eating, two important things are happening when they're eating. One is that they're keeping populations in check so that there's not one organism that can take over the soil and kind of take over everything. And so they're eating each other so that they're keeping a balance in the soil.
Okay.
Okay.
The second thing they're doing when they're eating is they're decomposing. So their decomposers, they're kind of like the trash men and women of the soil, where they're taking away, they're taking waste and then taking it and actually more like recyclers, where they're transforming it into nutrients and other materials that other organisms can use.
Wow.
So it's kind of like if we didn't have trash people, then our houses would be swallowed up by the trash that we create.
Yes.
And ideally, we're recycling our waste and turning it into something more valuable in a different form. So these microorganisms are taking waste from one organism and turning it into something valuable for other organisms. For example, if you have a tree that falls down in the forest or a branch or you have leaves.
Right. Fungus, it does make a sound.
It does make a sound. Or does it? I don't know.
That's a different podcast. That's a different podcast.
So that tree in the wood, if we didn't have fungus, it would just stay like that forever. But instead, the fungus comes in and decomposes that tree and breaks it into smaller pieces and then eventually into soil. And what it's doing is breaking that into nutrients that other organisms can now use to build something else or to live.
So is this why we compost stuff too?
Mm-hmm. Yep. That that's exactly why we compost. Is so you're taking your waste, your apple cores, orange peels, and then microorganisms are breaking down those pieces of orange peel, banana peel, and turning it into soil. And it's releasing the nutrients. So now instead of being bound up in that banana peel, it's released out so other organisms can use it.
Oh.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So I feel like my brain is translating this as, this is circle of life, all very the way down on the itty, 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 bitty yeah. scale.
Mm-hmm. Very, very circle of life.
Okay.
So when one thing in the circle really is one thing eats, then it poops, its poop is then valuable for something else that probably eats it. And then that poops, and then something else wow. eats it. So it's a whole improving circle of life.
That's yeah. a very, well, it's really cool that this, so all of this happens within the soil, and then the plants through their roots, I'm assuming, are able to absorb these nutrients that are being created. Is that right?
Exactly. You got it. Yep. So as bacteria and fungus poop, they release nutrients. Then mm-hmm. there's actually protozoa that will come in and eat bacteria. And then all the nutrients that were in the bacteria is now in the protozoa. And then the protozoa poops out the extra nutrients. And then those nutrients are getting taken up by a plant. And then the plant lives its life and then dies, goes back to the soil where the microorganisms then decompose it, release the nutrients, and wow. the whole thing starts all over again.
Okay. This is making a whole lot of sense.
It's really so cool that this happens and like we aren't even aware of it, right? But this is naturally how things occur.
Yeah, that's what I think is so fascinating about microorganisms is that we don't see them with our eye and we have no idea that this whole world is going on underneath our feet. It's like an entire bustling city of all these organisms doing their jobs and eating and pooping and providing so many nutrients, and we couldn't live without them because then they're essential for plants and we eat plants and then plants right. eat animals and we eat animals, and nothing could happen without all these microorganisms. We can't even see them.
Okay. So I want to kind of go back and ask what is probably a very basic question. Is there a difference between dirt and soil?
That is a great question. And a lot of times we use those two words interchangeably, but
yeah.
the main difference is with dirt. Imagine you are in a deserted city and there's okay. buildings and there's roads. All there is just structure. And okay. there's nothing living in it. There's nothing living.
Sure.
So soil is like a city that is bustling, that has
okay.
families cool. and friends and relationships and restaurants. There's food and there's all this activity. And so there's all of these connections and life within those structures. That's the main difference. That's the visual I always picture.
That's a really big difference, it sounds like.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay. So I want to go back to your thing from the beginning. So I go to the, you know, the garden store and I get a plant and it comes in, you know, the little pot and it has its own soil. I assume not dirt in it. And then I replant that with the soil. Is that still like, why does my plant still die? Like, how do I prevent that? Because you said not to use the soil that, you know, like, what do I do with that? I need the secret.
Yeah. The secret is thinking like nature. What would nature okay. do? And how is nature feeding its plants? So houseplants are kind of like an unnatural situation. Normally oh. one plant doesn't just live in a pot, right?
Okay. True.
And it has a continuous feed of nutrients. So in a forest, you know, leaves or trees are dropping their leaves and those leaves decompose and feed the microbes and then feed the plants. Okay. So if there's no extra food source for the microbes to eat to then provide nutrients for the plant, then that's what's missing. So that's why with houseplants, a lot of times we're buying synthetic fertilizers to just pour on there. But if you were putting something like compost on there, then the compost has nutrients for the microorganisms to eat to then provide nutrients for your plant.
Oh, okay.
Mm. I like that. That is probably the simplest explanation I've ever gotten that makes so much sense. I'm not a farmer. I just have a yard. The kids in the neighborhood play in the yard. We have one plant growing inside. I suppose this is a two-part question. Am I doing things that are bad for my yard already, just as a human? And are there things that I could do that are better for my yard?
My biggest tip to everybody is to always think like nature. And So, for example, we talked about a forest and trees dropping its leaves, right? And sure, those leaves perform a very important function. So they are now food for microbes to then break down and then create food for plants. So one major thing we do in our yards is every fall, we get really excited to rake our leaves. And we're stealing all of that food source from the microorganisms that then would eventually break those leaves down to then feed our plants in our yard.
Okay.
So if our listeners tell their moms and dads, because while we're taping this, it is autumn. If our listeners tell their moms and dads that Miss Kelly on the Solve It for Kids podcast said, I shouldn't rake the yard this weekend, you'd back them up?
Absolutely. Leave the leaves, everybody.
Leave the leaves. Oh, I like that. Look at that. Leave the leaves. That is a t-shirt. Okay, I have a question. Back to the houseplants. I know, it's houseplant. What if I take some of those leaves from outside and crumple them up and put them on the top of the soil of my houseplant? Will that help?
It will, as long as you have microorganisms living in the soil. So sometimes what happens when you buy a plant from a nursery is they have sterilized the soil so that there aren't any bad microorganisms living in there. They're careful so that you don't have any diseases, but then it also kills the good ones. So a lot of times it's just sterile. So you may need to inoculate your sterile soil with the good microorganisms.
How? The next question, how? I mean, I'm desperate to see how I can keep plants alive.
Yeah, great question. Compost is the best solution. So your compost is full of microorganisms because they broke down whatever was thrown into the compost pile and created the soil. And so now it's full of microorganisms and nutrients. And so adding compost to your houseplants should inoculate it.
Okay.
One of my very favorite types of composting is worm composting. And that gives you the most microorganism bang for your buck, where there's a special type of worms. They're composting worms, and you can even just do it in a bucket and they'll break down all your compost, turn soil. And what's really cool about worms is they have this incredible gut microbiome. So they have microorganisms living in their guts inside of them. So actually, when worms poop, they poop out more microorganisms than they took into their bodies, because you're getting worm microorganisms as well. So it's super healthy for your soil.
They're like superheroes for soil.
They are.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh. And
worm poop is called worm castings, if you ever want to buy it in the store, if you're not able to make your own.
So you can buy worm poop?
You can buy worm poop. They call it black gold.
Listeners, I want to know how many of you add that to your Christmas list this year.
If it's going to keep my plant alive, I might try that.
I was going to say, Jennifer's getting some.
That might work.
Okay. So this is fascinating. So worm composting, is that, do you just put worms in a bucket with what you would normally compost outside and just let the worms go to town?
There's a bit of an art to it, and there's lots of information online about how to build homemade worm bins, but it's a mixture of different types. They like certain types of foods, and then they also need certain materials for bedding. So it's pretty easy to do.
Okay.
Okay.
Worm bin turned me off a little bit there, but I'm not sure.
Okay. So we've been talking about horticulture, but you are the owner of Kelly Bull Permaculture Design.
Right.
What's the difference between horticulture and permaculture?
So horticulture is the art and science of growing plants. And then permaculture is, there's a million different definitions for permaculture, and it's kind of taken different directions depending on who's practicing. But for me, it's a design system and a philosophy that's based on looking to nature to find solutions.
Ooh,
okay.
And it's a holistic approach to design, and it's really thinking about systems and connecting elements of the system and really focusing on how those elements relate to each other. So for example, if you bought a bike and it gets delivered to you in a box and it's just a box of parts and it hasn't been assembled,
right,
then all you have is a box of parts. And they might be worth money individually, but it's not really worth much to you because they're not functioning together.
Right.
So what brings value to the bike is when you take those parts and you figure out how they connect together and how they relate to each other to create this system that then performs a really important function, like taking you to school or getting you to work or making it fun. So for me, permaculture design is how I design landscapes. And so I'm really connecting the different elements, the different parts of people's yards, and figuring out how to connect them all together so that they have relationships with each other and then they create the system. So I'm really creating ecosystems within.
I was just thinking it's a mini ecosystem you're building.
Yes. I'm assuming when you do this, it's important to use indigenous plants or plants that you find natural in those areas.
Yeah, a lot of times the native plants are the ones that are most adapted to where we live, and they're going to survive the best, especially with drought tolerant plants and plants that can take our climate.
Right.
But I also like to grow vegetables, and not all vegetables are native to this area. And a lot of other plants have important functions beyond natives. But I do like to really look at natives first to see if they're going to do the function that I need.
Okay. So when you design a new, if a permaculture landscape for a property somewhere, do you also give education to that owner to make sure that your work isn't destroyed quickly?
Yeah, I do.
Make sure it's upkept.
I do. So I specialize in low maintenance and resilient landscapes. So some that don't take a lot of work, but that really will last forever. And if you don't understand your yard and the plants and the whole system and how everything is connected, then that yard isn't going to live its happiest, healthiest life. So yeah, the education part is super important to me, to teach people how to grow plants, understand what's going on in the soil, understand the connection between the plants and the soil and all the microorganisms and how everything really is dependent on everything else. And those connections are really important. So yeah, definitely I love educating people on what is going on in their yards and how they can get a green thumb too.
Well, there you go. So also, I assume people can, like, say you, there's this beautiful plant that you want to put into your yard or whatever. I assume you can go online and look up what are the best places to put it, right? Because I know in Florida, we have to be very aware of where the sun is based on. Can you talk about the different kinds of plants and like how you figure out where to put something?
Right plant, right place is a good thing to keep in mind.
Okay.
Yeah. And again, looking to nature. So if you are out in a forest and you see trees, those trees are the ones that probably need the most sun. They're up in the canopy getting the most sun. And then if you look at what's growing beneath them, you can see what kind of requirements the plants beneath them need. So there are some plants that are happy in the shade because they grow beneath the trees. Some of them are growing right on the edge of the forest and a meadow. So they kind of need half and half. So really the best way to tell is to go out into nature and see what's growing naturally in your area and then copy it.
That's very cool.
That is cool.
Yeah, I live in Colorado and I hike a lot, and I've never really paid attention to, obviously I've seen
you know, trees are bigger, they're taller, there's smaller mm-hmm. things near the ground, there's bushes, there's, but I've never really paid attention to that's where those plants are thriving. Mm-hmm. That's where they are supposed to be.
Yeah. So when I'm creating a landscape design, I'm often looking at the trees around me in the area that I'm in and the plants that survive with them, because I know they all like to grow together. So then right. when I recreate it right. in a landscape, I know that they're going to be happy there as well.
That I mean, it's very cool.
Exactly. I mean, you want happy plants. So now I'm curious. We ask all of our experts to bring a challenge to our listeners. So what's your challenge?
My challenge is for listeners to go out and investigate your own yards. And if you don't have a yard, go investigate some natural area around you and dig in the soil and see what you can find. And although we talked mostly about microorganisms that you would need a microscope to see, mm-hmm. there's so much life going on that is also connected to the soil. So right now is a great time to look under all the leaves that have fallen from the trees.
Ah, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So there's all sorts of life going on in there. And a really important function of insects is there's a lot of shredding insects that will break down the leaves into smaller pieces. And then the microorganisms can get to work on decomposing those smaller pieces and then breaking up the nutrients for the plants to use. And so you can watch those insects do that. And so I would love for our listeners to go out and just poke around and see what you can find, what is going on in the soil.
Oh, that sounds fun.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of people that do this one.
Well, I mean, you get to go play in the dirt and the soil. I mean, that just sounds like something that's right up your alley there, Jeff. With you and Zoe, you can go out and take your spades or whatever you're doing.
Well, right now, my daughter is reading Jennifer's book all about rocks, shells, and fossils. So she is, when she reads stuff that is in our local Colorado neighborhood, she goes out to look for it and finds it and then brings it home. Yeah, she comes home dirty a lot. So
that's awesome.
I know. Yes, she loves your book. She loves it. She wants to tell you that she does. That's a separate thing. Miss Kelly, I have a question. My daughter plays with a whole bunch of kids in our neighborhood, and we have grassy areas. We have native Colorado areas, and we have a rock bluff that's sort of dirt covered. I call it semi-native because you can tell it was shaped when our neighborhood was formed. But obviously it's been there for decades now. Is there something that our kids that are playing out there can do in addition to just, like, are there certain areas? Should they dig at the bottom of trees? I'm just wondering if there's one little bonus to your challenge of just going out three steps from the front door and looking in the dirt.
Yeah, that's a great question.
Is there a great place for them to go?
Yeah, here's the bonus. Look in three different places of a variety of different areas. So yeah, you'll have different activity underneath a tree versus next to a rock, under a rock. So yeah, I think that's a great idea, is try three different places with a variety of situations.
I love it. I think I'm sending Zoe out there with a notebook and a pen so she can make notes in the three different places, because otherwise she's going to come back and be like, oh, I forget where this one happened.
Right.
All right. So we're going out with a notebook.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. There's a great app called iNaturalist.
Yep.
That it's great for identifying plants, but also it can do insects. So if you are looking at insects and your mission, then you can use the app to try to identify what you've seen.
iNaturalist is really cool. I've seen it before. Well, this has been a very interesting and fun talk. I'm so excited to try and get my plants to, you know, perk up a little. So thank you so much for being on our show, Kelly.
Thank you, Kelly.
Thank you so much for having me. This was so fun.
What a fun conversation. And talk about having a chat and learning things about what's literally right under our feet. My daughter and her friends love playing outside, and they have different nature zones that they call in our neighborhood. So I know that my daughter and I are definitely going to be doing this challenge of comparing the dirt and what it looks like and what we can see inside from several different areas. What about you, Jen?
I think that is A, so cool, and wow, I don't think I'm ever going to look at my backyard the same way again, right?
Agreed.
I'm going to look at, okay, cool, there are plants over here, but over here, there's kind of a forest, and there's ground cover, and what does that look like? So, you know, me and my little scientist notebook, we're going to go out there and take some notes. What do you think?
Absolutely. The first thing I'm going to be looking for is that bottom pile of leaves to see if I can see if they are already being broken down to see if I can tell.
That is so cool. Okay, so listeners, let us know what you have learned about your own backyard. Be sure to check out our website, solveitforkids.com. We'll have more information from Kelly there about horticulture and all the fun stuff. And then if you do discover anything cool about your backyard or the local park or whatever, be sure to share it with us. You can find us on social media at KidsSolve at Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook.
And before you come listen to the next episode, be sure you wash your hands really good. Dirty fingers and computers don't go together. But after you wash your hands, you'll hear us next time on
Solve It for Kids.